Hi, Dan.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, it's Thursday. It's the wrong day, but we're here because you're not here tomorrow. You're there tomorrow.
It's the right day because it's the day we're here.
You're right, actually. It's the right day and the right time. We're not the slaves to some strange transdimensional beast that tells us what to do.
Let me just check my notes here. Yes, you're right. That's true. We are not that. That's not what we are.
No. Not at all.
As long as he's okay with that.
To just teach the controversy. I got a question for you.
Seven?
No, I think... How many USB cables does one human being need? I ask you. Because I've been cleaning up my office.
With the sound of one hand clapping. And if a USB cable falls in the woods, is it a USB 3 cable? Is it a USB 2 cable? No one knows.
I have approximately a million USB A to micro USB cables in this office. I think I'm going to say four.
Okay. Micro, not mini.
Not mini. I have only about 12 USB A to mini cables. I'm going to say like three. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because there was a thing in the news again this past week about how Europe wants to standardize smartphone connectors. And this is the pro side of that argument.
Right.
Wouldn't it be great if we didn't need all these different types of cables? Because I've wanted to eliminate some of these things, but it turns out that, you know, I do have devices. Like, for example, mini is not as small as the micro. That's correct,
right,
on the USB side.
Yes.
So my mic, my Blue Yeti, uses a mini, but like everything else I have, I think, uses a micro.
Yeah, my Kindle uses micro USB.
Yep. Yep.
But my batteries all use micro USB to charge. But the Zoom recorder that I use for live recordings is powered by mini. And likewise, I have had like other kind of like card readers and things over the years that were all in mini. My, you know, camera was mini.
Right,
there were lots of those, but then they went to micro. But there's still these outliers that are mini and not micro. And you know, every time you get a gadget, it comes with one. Sometimes it comes with one just to charge it.
Right. Yeah.
Because I haven't counted yet, but I've probably got more than a dozen little tiny bricks. USB charging bricks.
Yeah,
right?
I've got a little like thing next to my desk that's like a drawer, you know, a little plastic Rubbermaid drawer set, and it is teeming with a rat's nest of cables.
Yes. Well, yeah. So I'm trying to de-ratify my office, which I did. I talked about this on Upgrade. I tried to do this. I did it successfully 2 years ago. But you know, entropy. So like over time, things you pull a cable out or you get a new cable and it doesn't go in the right place. And I don't have a system, and I don't think I'm gonna find one that perfectly places all of these cables exactly where they belong. I am kind of bagging them in groups, but yeah, over time the rat's nest returned. And so, you know, I'm back here. Oh, I didn't even mention my USB interface that I'm talking to you on right now. That is a printer cable. That is a USB-B cable. And I have like
God, why do we have 10 of those.
And I saved two. And I don't think I even need the two, but I saved two.
Well, you want one and you want a backup.
Yeah, and I do have somewhere, and there are a couple more bins I have to go through somewhere. I think I know what bin. I think I'm looking at it right now. I have a USB B to USB-C cable, which is actually useful if I travel with my interface and I want to be attached to my iPad, right? Or to a Mac, theoretically, you know, a Mac that uses USB-C, but I don't own a laptop that uses USB-C. So there's, you know, that's the realization. So, and I got some tough love from Marco Arment this morning in the Relay Slack, where he said, you just got to get rid of the cables, basically. And the wisdom from Marco that is absolutely right is cable hoarding was a thing you did because cables were expensive and hard to find, whereas now they're cheap and you can get them basically next day. And I don't want to be wasteful, but at the same time, holding on to a giant collection of cables just in case you might need one someday, unexpectedly, because you can save one or two. And I had that moment with some, I found a couple of coax cables. I found a couple RCA cables, like analog video and audio cables. And I was like, you know what? I don't need these. And if I ever suddenly found myself like, oh no, I have to do a project where I have to connect a VCR to something. Like, guess what? You order them on the internet. Like that's what happens next is you order them on the
internet. I do actually have one set of RCA cables in use right now, which is from my TV to my receiver. Because it's a really old receiver.
Right, and so it's doing left and right stereo?
Yeah, that's literally, I mean, it's a receiver from the early to mid-1990s, so that's literally all it has.
I have a little bag of optical cables, too, which is for that kind of thing.
So, someday, I did notice, I think I was over at my cousin's house looking at his newer TV and trying to help him hook something up, and I feel like it didn't even have RCA ports, and I was like, oh no, someday I will buy a TV that does not have these, and then I will be in trouble.
Yes.
I will need to replace everything.
I think if you buy a new TV, you will not have those.
Yep, well, I'm not in the market for a new TV right now, but yeah.
Good.
I'm totally, you know, get where you're coming from. I think I look around and the worst part about like the mess in my office is how much of this is like, it's just useless detritus, right? Like, and cables are a great example of that, right? Because it's like, they're literally just sitting around occupying space and never being used. That's kind of what they do.
Totally.
And like maybe 1% of the time you're like, aha, a cable. I need a cable for that. But because so much stuff is standardized, I tend to interchangeably use stuff. So for example, my computer has my iMac permanently plugged in on the back, has a lightning cable and a USB micro cable. And so if I ever need to charge anything, that's one of those.
Sure.
I will just take it to the desk and plug it in. And I just leave it there because it's like, you know, the stuff requires such infrequent charging generally these days, right? Like it's a pair Bluetooth headphones or a Kindle or something like that. Like, you know, something that I need to charge every few weeks, maybe, that like unplugging it and stowing the cable and then finding it when I need it is just way more of a pain than just leaving it there.
Yep. It's true. I have a similar setup. Like by my bed, I keep a micro USB cable plugged in along with the USB-C cable, and that's like the Kindle charger, but it charges other stuff that uses that, and the USB-C, which charges various things, including my iPad, which is the primary reason.
I don't have that much USB-C stuff still, so I do have a few cables for it, but I really don't, because I don't have a USB-C iPad, sort of the main thing.
That's what did it for me.
Or a USB-C laptop.
Yeah, right. Well, you're in for, at some point, again, you're going to buy new hardware and you're going to be forced to have new cables. That's what's going to happen, whether it's a TV or an iPad or a laptop.
I have to say, along those lines, I think I posted this somewhere in one of the Slacks. So there was a new app that came out yesterday that was making the rounds called Sensei, which I think is a sort of a merged version of a couple of this developer's previous apps. But essentially, it's a system management app. And it does a lot of different things, like looks at your battery or your fans or like all that kind of, you know, like sort of like an iStat, but with some other like cache cleaning stuff, et cetera. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that looks kind of interesting. I'll download the trial and check it out. And I've been having battery issues on my MacBook Air. So I was like, oh, I'll see what this says about it. And it's like, your battery health is 43%. And I was like, that is not great.
No.
This is the new battery I put in a year ago.
Yeah.
Which was a third party battery. And I had several people chiming in to say, yeah, third party batteries pretty much never work as well as the Apple batteries, whether by, I don't know, you know, just because they're cobbled together or because they don't work as well integration. I don't know, but it is very evident. And I was trying to do a lot of stuff on my laptop yesterday because I'd been having some foot issues. So I was like sitting on the couch and I'm like, all right, I'm just working on editing podcasts and stuff. And man, that thing was chugging along. Like, things that seemed like they should have been relatively simple, you know, getting beach balls and stuff like that. And I was like, how much of I wonder if some of this is related to, like, you know, I don't know how much performance stuff is adjusted on the fly when the battery, you know, gets low or whatever. But because this battery is so unreliable, I feel like it's always trying to sort of preserve life on the battery that it really can't do. And so performance kind of goes out the window, and not that it's like a super new laptop either. So all those things put together, and I was like, just sitting there. I think my wife came home and I was like, I need a new laptop. Which is good, because I'm about to go use it for 3 days and we'll really put it to the test.
Yeah. All right, let's. Here's my next game for you.
Okay. Seven. It's going to be right sooner or later.
Okay, let's see. So I've got the keyboard that I'm using. I shouldn't count that. But here's this is the Vortex Race 3. Here's the Logitech wireless keyboard that I used to use all the time. Here's a Magic keyboard in that Studio Neat case. Here's an old Apple keyboard in the in-case origami. Here's a keyboard that somebody sent me to review that I wrote a review saying I didn't like it. Here's a thing I found that's I was surprised. It's an HP keyboard that's very much like the old Apple keyboard that goes in the in-case origami, but it's from HP. Why do I have it? I'm not sure. Here's a Matthias keyboard. Here's a different Matthias keyboard. Here's a WASD keyboard. And here's my old, Leopold keyboard. So on my desk right now, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh my God. 1, 2, 3. Don't miss one. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 keyboards. Plus the one I'm using.
Yeah, I think I lost on that round, and I lost because I have way fewer keyboards than that. Or maybe I won. I'm not sure how this game works.
I have too many keyboards.
The
real killer is this little stack of ones that are the ones I used to use when I just used either the standard Apple or like the standard Apple laptop keyboard before I went to mechanical keyboards. Because those, it's a very small stack. They're very thin and light. But I'm never using those again, so I should do something nice with them, like donate them to a Goodwill or something.
I have a Magic keyboard here that I use every day on my iMac. I have a Logitech wireless keyboard over there that I used to use with my iPad and with the Apple TV and stuff, but I haven't used in a very long time. I see over on a pile over there a Bridge keyboard, which you gave me.
Oh, I didn't even count that.
Yeah.
I got that, too.
And then I know in the one of my storage bins here, I think I have two old Apple keyboards, one of which is sort of the white keycap version.
Oh, yeah.
What era was that? Probably like mid-2000s?
I have an Apple Extended around here somewhere, ADB keyboard, too.
I don't have that. But I have then a blue...
And two original Mac keyboards. Oh, my God, the keyboards.
Yeah, I was going to say, the other one I have is a blue and white one that came with my Power Mac G3 blue and white.
Sure.
Which is USB. But, yeah. So, I think those are all my keyboards. I'm not a keyboard guy. I type a lot, but I don't worry about it. I just type with whatever I have.
Well, I gotta do something about this. That's too many keyboards. I hate shipping things, so, you know, what I should do is just, like, sell them on eBay or something like that. But I think many of them I may just... see if I can take them to a place that will take old tech and take it away from me.
Send them to the farm upstate.
Yeah, upstate. Well, if the Goodwill will take them or something and use them, like donate them somewhere, or if I have an electronics recycling place that I think their goal is to get them out used and then they'll disassemble them if they have to. But like, I want them to go ideally to a good home. They all work fine.
Right.
I just don't need
that
many keyboards.
That's the frustration, isn't it? Like, I have so much stuff that I'm looking at getting rid of, and I always feel wasteful about it because it's like, well, this is functional. I just don't want it, right? Like,
yeah.
And I feel bad because, like, I don't want to generate more waste.
Yeah.
But recycling of electronics really only goes so far. I don't really know what the right way to handle that is. I mean, like, the best thing you can do, I think, is take it to like the electronic recycling, but then you just have to not think too much about what that means downstream.
Right, right. Well, that's why I want, you know, ideally I want it to go to somebody who's going to look at it and say, this is a perfectly good Bluetooth keyboard and we're going to sell these for, you know, a dollar or two, or we're going to give these to a school, or we're going to do whatever we need to do. But
that was always a problem getting rid of old computers too, is like at a certain point when I was ready to get rid of an old computer, it was so old that nobody wanted it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was trying to help my mom with a tech issue a couple weeks ago, and I looked at her computer, and I think it's running El Capitan, and I was like, oh, how many versions, like, how far can this go, actually? And I think the answer, no, it may have been running High Sierra, and I was like, oh, this can get to El Capitan or something, and then it's shot. And it's like, well, that's great. Like, it still works, and she's going to keep using it until it, like, basically doesn't work anymore. But at that point, nobody wants a computer that runs an operating system that's like four versions too old.
Yeah, no, it
doesn't run anything.
It's this weird, uncanny valley where it's not vintage and curious for a collector, and it's also not useful.
Yeah.
And it, you know, because I was just looking on eBay for an old computer, and I was just shocked at how expensive this old Mac was that I was looking at. It was like a Duo. And I thought, you know, this is on the other side of that uncanny valley, right? This is when you,
it's a collector's
item. When you take your stuff to the recycling and you're like, nobody wants this Apple keyboard. Well, guess what? In 15 years, somebody's going to be like, oh, check it out, Apple keyboard, right? But right now, it's just like, but that's because most of them just get discarded and are disassembled or buried in a landfill or something like that. And the ones that survive are the ones that are valuable. But I'm starting to come around to that, the idea that as a tech writing person, I should probably hang on to some of the old tech rather than getting rid of it like I always used to, just because it'll probably come around again. But that also, it also helps that I have out here in the garage a little bit of space to store things where I never used to. And so, you know, when we used to park a car in our garage and stuff, and then before when we lived in apartments, it's just like I had friends who would save, like John Syracuse has got stuff in his attic and Andy Anatko has a storage locker, and I'm like, I don't know, guys, when I am done with a computer, it's out the door, because where I only have room for one. And it's the one I'm using.
I live in a one bedroom apartment with my wife. There's no extra room here. And like, you know, we've been trying to go through and get rid of a lot of junk in the past couple weeks, and it is it's challenging.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. As I look around, survey the damage of this.
It's the worst is when you come back from vacation and you've done a very successful job of living out of like a suitcase or a backpack or whatever. And you're like, oh man, I don't need that much stuff in my life. And then you get back like, oh, why do I have so much stuff?
I have to do an accessory purge too, because I've got a bunch of things that are like a case for a 4-year-old iPad.
Like, yeah, I think you just have to toss those things, man. I think I threw out like an old smart cover, maybe from like my original or second generation iPad the other day, because I was like, what am I going to do with this? It doesn't even work with anything.
Yeah, and with mine, what happens generally is you get your, if you get a review unit from Apple, they give you these accessories and they don't want the accessories back and they don't fit in the box. And like, so I have these accessories for products I don't have.
Yeah. Yep.
Or I have an accessory that I got from Apple that they didn't want back for a product that I then bought one, but that one's old and now filed away. And it's like, how many of these things? So I'm saving some of it. Like, I've got all the old iPads with all the old, like, smart keyboards in a stack.
Yeah. Right.
And that's where they are. And will I ever use them again? I don't know. Maybe
you'll
not.
You'll drag them out to take a comparative picture at some point, right? Here's all the iPads.
That's the truth of it, and that's the sadness, right? It's like, oh, I could have probably, when it was only a year old, gotten rid of that iPad and somebody could have used it, but I needed to hang on to it, and now it's old enough that I kind of can't use it, but I might, and the truth is, yeah, it is, for what we do, it's dumb stuff, like I could use this to take a picture. Test out, like, this, somebody says, oh, there's this horrible bug, but it's only running on iOS, like some old version, or, you know, I can do that, but it's, I don't know, it's weird. Old tech stuff is, it makes me uncomfortable, because it does, at the end, you're exactly right. This is the, where the rubber meets the road in terms of waste, where you feel like, you know, If you get a new device, like we do this for a living, but like if you get a new device every year or two, where does the old device go and where do all its accessories go? And it is magnified for me because I'm getting review units and I've got a family and I've got things that I take that are like handed down. And I say, well, I'll keep that iPhone 4. I have like 5 iPhone 4s in a drawer. I should probably like pick one and put the others in the recycling. I don't know.
Probably.
I don't need four.
Make them deathmatch.
iPhone. I'm not sure I've got an iPhone 5. I might have one iPhone 5, but so many iPhone 4s. I don't know why.
Yeah, I have a weird... I have to look and see. Like, I have like a dip from, like, I have a bunch of old iPhones, and then I don't have a lot of the models because I think the trade-ins started.
Yeah.
So I have, like, an original. I think I have a 3G and a 3GS. I may not have a 4. Like, I got to the point where you could start selling them and trading them in and that kind of stuff. And I think at that point, I have boxes for a lot of them. But the boxes. I don't know why I keep the boxes, but there was a joke on a sitcom my wife and I were watching last night about how a guy is like cleaning out his house for a yard sale and all he found were boxes containing other empty boxes. And my wife gave me a very pointed look because when she moved in, we cleaned out the hall closet and it turned out that the back of the hall closet, my hall closet is very long because it goes underneath the stairs that go upstairs to the apartment upstairs. So it actually goes around a corner. And when we started excavating it, it just turned out it was full of all these empty boxes that I had saved thinking, well, you know, I'll move at some point and these will be handy boxes to have.
Mm-hmm. This goes back to the cables, which is exactly. I know you think those boxes will be handy when you move, but you've been there for many years.
Yep.
And probably the thing
you can
to
always
do
get more boxes
is just get more boxes when you need to move.
Yep. Yep. But like, it is so hard to deal with the whole like, but, like, it seems so stupid to get rid... I have the boxes. I'm getting rid of the boxes and then getting more boxes. That seems woefully inefficient. But, yes, I was disabused of that notion, and the boxes were disposed of.
Good.
Yes. But I do still have a ton of Apple boxes because they're... I don't know.
I do, too, and I actually had to go through, and I'm going to go through and see, do I have these products? I'm just going to... The problem with Apple, as environmentally friendly as they want to be, boy, they got a lot of like plastic taped inside a cardboard box.
Yeah.
And
I tossed both of the HomePod boxes I had. Those are ones that are annoying too because they have, I think it's all cardboard, but they are essentially molded cardboard sort of on the inside. And like they're actually difficult to take apart. Like you're gonna need like a razor blade or an X-Acto knife to really take those apart, box cutter or something, just because they are solid. As opposed to I was throwing out some Amazon and Google boxes, and I was like, these actually come apart pretty easily for the most part. I understand. Like I have that emotional connection to the boxes, and yet at the same time, it's like I realize that is irrational and absurd. They're just boxes. I say as I look up at my Airport Extreme box.
I mean, I have the original iPod box, but that's nostalgia and history and stuff. But like a random iPad, bleh, whatever.
Yeah. Got some Apple Watch boxes, probably a laptop box in there somewhere. There's my AirPods. That's still.
Now, our friend Dan Frakes used to save all his boxes because he was an obsessive reseller. He would keep his stuff in perfect condition, and like after a year or two, he'd put it back in the box and sell it on eBay and be like, an original box and all that. And again, I would think, I got no room for this box. I'm getting this box out of here.
I mean, just thinking about that, that Dan sent me some, a pair of speakers at one point just because... he didn't want them in his house, which I understand. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, if anybody needs any boxes, they know where to come.
To Dan's house.
They're
outside.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, anything else going on?
It's, kind of quiet.
Yeah.
Kind of quiet. There are a few things here and there that people were talking about this week, but I didn't think there wasn't really much in the way of news. Unless you want to talk about the FBI wanting to unlock that phone, but that's kind of it.
I feel like we played that song before.
Yep.
Which, you know, and Apple is doing exactly what it did the last time, which is to say, you know, there's a little more nuance than some people get, but basically it's like, look, encryption works this way. We're not going to make an encryption backdoor because then anyone has access and it's not secure. And that's bad for everyone, including people and governments, because now anybody, you know, if we put in a backdoor, it means like any government anywhere in the world, an oppressive government can go through that backdoor. So yeah, that's why we do encryption the way we do, is it's math. It's either encrypted or it's not. And if it is, we don't want the key because then somebody's got the key and that's really bad. And we've seen it time and again. The nuanced part is that some stuff on iCloud is not encrypted and, mm-hmm. and they follow the rules about providing that. But what seems to be the core of this, and I kind of hate to phrase it this way, but I think that there's truth in it, which is the government is lazy. Okay, I don't hate it. I actually kind of love saying that. The government and law enforcement is sometimes super lazy, and what they want is they want to go to Apple, let's say, and say, unlock this phone for us. We heard there's a bug. We heard there's an exploit. Can you just do that? And this is what happened in San Bernardino, is Apple basically says, no, we're not going to put our technical people who built this product on a project to hack our operating system or to exploit a bug in our operating system. That our goal is to close them, not keep them open, to do this. And more to the point, if you know about this, you know that there are numerous third parties who specialize in exploiting bugs to provide access to data. You should work with them. And then they're like, oh, it's Apple, which is why I think it's a pretense. I think it's a pretense because it's really about encryption and wishing there was a backdoor. But I will say again, and you know, apologies to people who might be politically offended by this, but because in our world today, there's so much of like, oh, if you criticize law enforcement, that means you hate law enforcement and wish there were no laws and it was anarchy. It's like, no. However, I will point out the classic example, which is when the Miranda decision happened and everybody was like, oh my God, we have to inform people we arrest of their rights before we talk to them. We'll never be able to do anything involving law enforcement again. And you know what? It was fine. Like, they changed. It was the right thing to do. And life went on. And this is an example like that. Like, no, don't tie our hands, because law enforcement will never, ever say they want less power. And that's the job of everybody else in the government and in the society to say, no, we are going to constrain police and law enforcement power because we don't live in a police state.
Yeah, I think what's especially telling about this, based on reporting I've seen from a couple places, I think maybe Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, the phones in question are also way older. It's like an iPhone 5 and an iPhone 7. Yeah,
they're completely exploitable.
Yeah, exactly. And like an iPhone 5, you know, an iPhone 5 doesn't even have a secure enclave. So like,
there are known exploits. There's people who sell software to fix this stuff, but instead they're like, Apple, do this for us. It's like, well, no. And remember, in San Bernardino, they wanted Apple to do a special like build
version
of iOS that would circumvent things. It's like, we're going to have developers hack our own operating system to do this. It's bananas.
Yeah. Well, and that compared with the fact I also saw a story this
disingenuous
week. Yeah, that's the thing, is I saw a story this week that suggested they had already used an exploit to unlock an 11 Pro. And it's like, if they can unlock an 11 Pro, they can unlock a 5, right? Like, that's the part that's really kind of suspect and just feels, part of it's laziness, as you said, but part of it is just like, it's kind of like lazy nefariousness, where it's like, how much can we get away with without working very hard?
Yeah, and also I'll say it's disingenuous because, as with San Bernardino, there's no data on those devices. Right,
and like, Apple provided all the iCloud stuff, which it could provide, so...
Yeah, and I would bet that if you realistically ask somebody involved in that investigation, what do you expect to get off of that phone? They'd say nothing. But why not? Again, it's sort of like, well, why not?
It's a stalking horse.
Why not find every single thing we can just in case? And that's fine. That's part of your investigation. But really, it is a stalking horse. It really is just there to allow us to ratchet up the argument that the big tech companies aren't playing ball with law enforcement because they haven't built from the Washington Post editorial board, a magic golden key that allows anybody who wants to decrypt everything. Which,
well, it's yeah, I'm sure also that magic golden key, like when you touch it, it senses your intentions and knows if you're a good guy or a bad guy.
Because
right?
It's like magic, Dan. Because it's magic.
That's what it does. It's like a sorting hat. It knows what's in your mind. Yep. No, that's about where I figured we were. It was just one of those, yet another thing that came up that's like, I heard this morning as I woke up on the radio, you know, a promo for one of the NPR shows that was going to be talking about this later today. And it's like, I don't often want to call into these shows, but that was one where I wanted to call in and be like, look, here's the deal.
Yeah.
This is what's going on here.
This is not policy. This is math. We can't make the thing you want, you know, which is a thing that only gets used in certain circumstances that are extreme. Once it's there, it's there. We've seen it before. Backdoors leak immediately. That's what happens to every backdoor that's ever been made.
Yep.
It's not. It's you are breaking encryption by doing it.
Yeah.
By the way, this is the point where I would normally tell you about my Macworld column this week and what it's about. But listeners to the Secret Podcast or the Six Colors Podcast, I took Secret out of it because it's not a secret. I want people to know about it and want to subscribe. But this podcast, listeners to this podcast last week heard my entire argument for my Macworld column this week. I just wrote it down.
I stole part of that. And I on Clockwise this week, I think I couched it as like, I feel like this was also like a Leibniz Newton situation, because I talked about your what we talked about last week, which was the VPN service.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, I feel like that is an idea I wrote down at some point, but like, I'm just going to assume we came up with it independently, and but I cited you as we discussed it.
And I linked to your piece. It all goes back together. I linked to your Macworld story and my Macworld story, but I laid out that was the thing that we talked about last week about an Apple appliance that's like a network appliance, but it's the next generation airport. Yep. It's mesh networking. They offer a VPN service. Somebody pointed out you can do you could also do like DNS and like there are a bunch of like secure network things that you can do once you're in charge of that. And of course you could also roll that out on the operating system updates so that they when you're out of your own house, they just automatically connect to the Apple VPN service that you're signed up to. And so anyway, I went into that with a little bit more detail, but not a lot. It's only it's a 1200 word column or whatever.
This is the point at which I would tell you about my macro column this week, but it's not up yet. And it's also not written yet.
Okay. Well, that's something for you to do today. I'm supposed to write a piece for Tom's Guide today. I have no idea what that's going to be about. I'm going to Oregon tomorrow to see my daughter for the long weekend. So I don't know what else. I would like to do a chart again. I have an idea for a chart of the week, a fun with charts. We'll see if I get that done before we go to the airport tomorrow. I will give a little status report to dear podcast listeners, dear subscribers. I'm working on working on an update to the website that's going to actually put the subscriber content on the website, sort of as a way, like if you're logged in, you'll just be able to see it and like the magazine stories and the podcasts and stuff. And if you're not, it will tell you that we have it to induce you to subscribe, because I'm hoping that might drive some subscribers. So I'm working on that in the background. And I'm also working on a series in the background that I'm not ready to announce, but just to say that one of the things that I've been doing in this period where I'm not writing as much as I would normally be, I'm actually writing things for Six Colors in the background, trying to kind of get ahead and figure out what this series is. And then I will ideally drop those every week, but I'm trying to get ahead. I have two of them written. I have to write an intro to explain what the heck the series is, but first I got to figure out what it is. So anyway, that's my tantalizing.
It's a process. It's all thing. Process.
I'm pulling out a lot of old issues of magazines is what I've been doing, but most definitely
go
not
after the boxes,
but not buying old computers, because that is a bridge too far.
Definitely don't buy old magazines either, because that is a quick fire route to hoarding
and fire.
And fire.
Also, most of the magazines that I have in my bookshelf are available as PDFs on the internet now, which means that at some point, talk about decluttering.
Yep.
At some point, I should probably just recycle all my old magazines. The problem is, like, it's essentially my first 15 years of my career in paper form, And to have them all just kind of go away and be replaced with these sort of scans from the internet.
It's not the same.
I don't know. I don't know. It's going to be a while before I'm able to do that.
I've got the stack here, Jason. I've got Macworld July 2006, mm-hmm. which is the first, I think the first where I ever had a print piece.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to November 2014, which was the last, I believe, paper
last
issue.
Print issue. I still have my issue of that last issue still has the post-it note on it that was from Susie, who took over. She was like the last person standing as editorial, you know, lead for Macworld, and she came by my house one day and dropped off that last issue, and I still have the post-it note on it because I feel like it's fitting. It's just sort of like, here's the last issue. That's a classic, because that's got my farewell column in it that was not supposed to have been read as a farewell column to anything but the fact that we weren't doing a print magazine anymore, but was also my farewell column.
That was
a long time ago now, Dan. Whatever. What are print magazines? I don't even know.
I don't know. Blogs, podcasts. That's where it's at, man.
That's where it's at. That's right. All right. Have fun at the mystery hunt. Anybody who's doing the MIT mystery hunt, look for Dan this weekend, because he'll be there solving puzzles.
I'm around.
Look for a puzzling guy. I'd say look for the guy in the Red Sox hat, but it's Boston.
There's lots. Also, it's kind of cold, so I'll probably be wearing like a beanie or something instead.
Oh, interesting.
So, I do that in the winter, but we
alternative Dan,
yeah,
off-brand
that's right.
Dan.
It's got like an umlaut over the A or something.
Nice. All right, but thank you for being subscribers and listening to the Six Colors Podcast, and we'll see you next week, probably on a Friday, because that's a much more reasonable day for this.
Sure.
Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.